Accession number 17747, reel 34.
You're at tented camp near Mina to provide a force to deal with any trouble from the turbulence in the Greek brigade in Cairo. How long did you stay in that camp?
I think we were there about 6 weeks, if not longer. We didn't, at the first, we didn't even have tents, and I've noted in my diary that I slept out in the open under a lovely desert sky. And we had to prepare to defend ourselves, not only against Greeks who were having some sort of uprising, but also Egyptians, which was not an organised kind of rebellion in their case, but they just didn't like the British rule. Particularly, and they were as awkward as they could be in many cases.
What sort of awkwardness?
Yes, having been to Egypt since then as a tourist and realizing how there is, to an extent, air conditioning and all the rest of modern civilized provision, it makes me realize how unprepared we were for the sheer desert heat, without any cover other than a tent if we were lucky, certainly no precautions against sunburn, very little medical advice against getting too hot or indeed against drinking the water, come to that, although common sense dictated that you had water from your army trucks rather than anywhere else.
I think you were going to say what sort of things the Egyptians did to be awkward.
Nobody attacked us. I think we would have hesitated to go, and indeed we did hesitate to go into the back streets in Cairo, because we were not popular, and we sensed this in the same way as, I suppose, occupying forces, which in a sense we were, no doubt have felt in other parts of the world since. After all, we were not, I mean, Egypt was not even a colony. It was this sort of old, I can't remember the details. It was a protectorate, a dual mandate with the French and then a British protectorate, and they were waiting to get shot of us. In effect, the independence movement was already embryonically there, and of course they had the knowledge that the Germans might very well have been there themselves had things turned differently at Alamein. So we were there to an extent on sufferance and against a background of resentment. Whether at that time, as has developed since, there was any even beginnings of fundamentalism, which would have caused a religious distaste to the same extent as there would be now, I don't know.
How did they show this resentment? Was there anything positive, or did you just get a sort of subjective impression of a hostile atmosphere?
Well, apart from anything else, of course, but this combines with crookedness among certain elements. I mean, they did actually raid and burgle our tents at night, and people had things disappear when they were actually asleep in the tents at the side of the Great Pyramid or not so far away. I wouldn't make too much of this. It was an atmosphere rather than action which you could put your finger on. And we did know that that they were inclined to be hostile. And if there was an opportunity for trouble, you felt that we would be the objects of that trouble. I'm sorry, I can't be more specific about it. I don't remember anything other than subservient waiters, children with eye diseases going blind in the fields, and the old Archimedes principle of water wheels bringing up the water from the canals to water the fields. It was all very domestic for the most part. There was incredible poverty. We felt terribly sorry for them. They were extraordinarily aggressive in trying to sell us things for provisions for the mess. I remember going out on a a recce to buy eggs in an armoured car, not because we needed the armour, but because it was the vehicle immediately to hand. And we went out into... I went out with a mess corporal and one or two lance bombardiers and a driver. Of course, I was mess secretary and I wanted to forage for several dozen eggs, this kind of thing. And we bought this stuff and we resisted buying some bananas, and these were thrust at us through the open window of the armoured car, and they simply would not go away. And I remember the driver I had took he simply got out and seized a huge basket of bananas, and he was a big chap, and just threw them over the nearest hedge to get shot of the natives, as we called them. So there was a sort of a current of ill feeling. This is what I'm talking about, really. And we had to be on guard, not in the military sense, but mentally and spiritually on guard against trouble. It was an uneasy sort of situation. And, of course, the background to this was the extreme luxury in which Western... to coin a phrase, Western residents were still living in Cairo, who'd been there for years. I come on in my diary to friends we made. One of the people recruited at this time into our regiment was a second lieutenant called Bill Lowes, who'd been promoted, commissioned in the field out there. And he had... made over the past two or three years, friends with sort of British residents who had adopted young officers there to be friendly with them. In his case, the Fields Ends, I think they were called, who were Anglo-American Tobacco. And they had a luxury flat right in the heart of Cairo, not far from the Giza, Gezira Club, and they invited Bill Lowes and any friend of his along, and I became his friend because he was in RHQ as a survey officer, and we went along several times to the Fields Ends, and they were really remarkably generous, and corresponded for a while, even after the war. So there were these different aspects of Cairo. The whole period was one of lotus eating for the first time in my life. I mean, it was real luxury. We had a regimental, the mess houseboat we rented on the Nile for a party, a memorable party. I mean, the thing went on till all hours, actually moored on the Nile with dancing and a hired band and every conceivable food stuff. And I remember it's the first time I'd ever met South African nurses who were stationed in Cairo at that time. People, against this background and against the background of living in tents in the heat, did undergo physical effects. I mean, I was looking last night through this and trying to get the flavour of it, and I've got things like having a lovely canal-side ride, the Sweetwater Canal, as it was called, with delightful, almost postcard scenes of camels and ancient irrigation, mud villages, mosques. And I was on an intelligence course at this time, using air photos of Greece and having lectures on political warfare.
Do you remember anything about the content of that course?
No, I don't. It's 53 years ago. I was trying last night to remember it, and I can't remember anything about it at all.
And you had... You were saying that you had air photographs, so presumably they were trying to teach some elements of interpretation.
Yes. I should think this course was not mainly for gunners, but of course we had a particular interest in air photos, as we've discussed before, in the
Indeed.
Context of the Cassino and the Apennines.
And you said that there were photographs of Greece.
These happen to be that, yes.
So just being used as examples.
Yes, yes. It wasn't a preparation for landing in Greece. I can't remember what the position of Greece was at this time. I think, having been driven out of Greece and Crete by the Germans, it was probably still in German hands until a month or two later when landings took place. A sort of Fitzroy Maclean, all that sort of stuff.
We did have, obviously, agents and networks operating in Greece, but... The Germans and Italians.
That's right. But of course, the Italians had long since given up the war.
Indeed.
And how this left Greece, I simply don't know. It must have been chaotic, I should think, with partisans, Germans, Italians, and our own rebel Greek brigade in Egypt.
Bulgarians, too, of course, they were.
The Bulgarians, yes. Yes, I mean, it was a typical sort of Balkanized chaos, I should think.
And the political warfare, do you remember anything of what that was about?
No. No, I don't. Lecture on political warfare I have written down. I would guess it must have been pamphleteering and all that kind of thing, and ways in which you could... sponsor uprising by partisans of various kinds.
So you're at... was this while you were still at MENA?
Yes, all of this was from a base in MENA, which was about 8 miles... north, would it be? I can never get this clear. 8 miles north, I think, of Cairo. And this course was right across the other side of Cairo, because I mentioned that I saw the Saqqara pyramids on the way to this course by motorbike. I used to motorcycle right across Cairo from one end to the other to get to this and other things. All kinds of training things were going on, as well as this intelligence course I happened to end up on. I had a hairy 2.5 days with the audit board, who came to audit the mess accounts in the middle of all this. I mean, the civil side of the War Office was mighty in these parts. You know, you'd get an SEO in charge of accounting for an area of army activity, and they were in just as though we were a peaceful little national insurance office in Sheffield. They'd come in and go through the books, all in the middle of the desert. It's difficult to give the flavour of this, but the two things going on side by side, I mean, there was gun drill, there was political problem, there was intelligence course, and then you were hauled back in to have your accounts audited. I had got a clean bill, but I noted that one of my colleagues didn't, and no doubt he had to spend weeks extricating himself. I also noted somewhere here that the accounts a week or two later, following the houseboat party, only balanced by my putting £5.10 in from my own pocket. And also, there was a problem at this time, I've noted too, which I never found the answer to, but the adjutant was seriously worried because money was going missing from the impressed account. And presumably this was the actual taking of cash from a strong box or whatever. And I don't know what the outcome was. All of this sort of domestic background in the regiment was against the background of going and seeing things in Cairo. I remember going to see King Farouk's tomb being built in the Coronation Mosque. It's the first time I had seen at close quarters alabaster. You could see through 5 feet of stone a candlelight at the other side of this tomb being built.
Did you do this sort of thing on your own, or did you have organised parties?
It was not organised. We just shoved off, you know. I mean, we knew we were given guidebooks. I still have one or two of them to Cairo. We were told to be careful about this and careful about that, but go and see this and go and see that. It's a strange combination of being occupying force and yet tourists.
And student,
a bit of everything.
We
were writing home. And you see, the background of this is that we were all waiting with bated breath for the second front to start. This was May 1944, and that started, what, 6th of June.
Did you have any inkling of the timing of the second front, or where?
No, we were not really. I had a special interest because my younger brother was in the Royal Signals, and he was training for beach signals, and indeed did land in Brittany on the 6th of June.
In Brittany or in Normandy?
Normandy, Hermonville.
Ah, yes, the Sword Beach area.
That's right. Yes. And he's been back there many times, and still welcomed by the villagers they landed among.
Was he a regimental signals officer?
He wasn't an officer. He was a corporal in the Royal Signals. And regimental, I don't know. He was not regimental. I mean, he was absolutely basic signal stuff. He wasn't attached. When you say regimental in the context of signals, I'm not quite sure what you mean.
I was wondering whether he'd be part of a detachment attached to a battalion headquarters, or whether he'd been at a brigade headquarters.
I think army headquarters.
Yes.
I mean, he was among signal people, not among infantry.
So he's army troops?
Yes, I think he was army troops. But I'm not sure about that. I never did find out. And we heard from each other perhaps once every 3 months, and this would be retrospective stuff. I didn't hear about, I mean, I assumed he was in the invasion, but I didn't know for another 2 months that in fact he had been. Communications were not very good. I had a letter from a girlfriend at home wishing me all the best for my 23rd birthday, I see. I noted wryly that she was just 1 year out. I was 22. I may have felt 23.
And what sort of training was the regiment doing then, apart from the standard refresher training and gun drill and that sort of thing?
We had I'm not quite clear about this, but I have noted that I was tied up in a rather uncomfortable in the desert sand signals exercise. And I think there was some gun training as well. Though it was not very good territory for 25-pounders, all this sand around. That
Why
must have been unusual.
What was the problem with the sand?
Well, I mean, you get down the barrels and up the spout. It's very penetrative stuff, and into optical equipment, just as it is as well to keep one's video camera away from the sand now, but for the same sort of reason. Messy stuff, sand. It got everywhere.
Did you find any ways of minimising the damage it did?
I think covering things up as best one could. I don't think there's any total safeguard. I mean, when you get the Hamsin, the desert wind, it simply blows sand everywhere. How they managed in the open battle conditions of Alamein and so on, and the earlier forays into Tobruk and other places, I really don't know. I mean, I don't know how they made the machinery work, the vehicles, the guns. Must have been extraordinarily vulnerable all the time.
Well, those who did serve in the Western Desert said that the 25-pounder was generally very reliable.
Yes.
And they very much appreciated it.
Yes.
But most equipment with moving parts had a much more limited life than it would have done.
Yes,
in Italy.
That I can imagine, yes.
For example, a 3-ton truck would probably be ruined after a mere 5,000 miles.
Really?
Because the sand would get into the lubricant and it would grind away at the metal.
That's right.
Parts.
It becomes the opposite of a lubricant.
Exactly.
It becomes
an abrasive.
Yes, that's right. We were all very young. I mean, I reflect on this, and we're talking about youngsters who, for the most part, tended to be sort of second-year history students in this strange situation of looking after guns in a desert, a totally unnatural habitat for most of us. It's a background, it's very difficult even for me to comprehend. I can't believe it, looking back. I've noted all sorts of odd things, like firing a Beretta and watching German weapons being fired. This was on a course. Very good lecture on the Secret Service in Greece. This was part of that intelligence course. How people were demolishing bridges, derailing trains, the use of agents, etc. And this, of course, made us wonder where we were destined for. We didn't know we were going back to Italy. We were told at one point that we were going to Syria. And this seemed quite an adventure to go and see, you know, the Middle East, the Holy Land, and so on. That came to nothing. And then we had, on this intelligence course, I had all this stuff which was Greek-oriented. Made us wonder whether we might be going into the Balkans. I suppose the fact is that nobody knew, that it had not been planned and decided.
There's another possibility that you were being given this sort of training and orientation as part of a means of deceiving the enemy about
where you
were likely to go.
The Germans must have known exactly what courses we were on, who was on them, and they'd draw their own conclusions.
Well, it would be inevitable that even with the most comprehensive security measures, there'd be occasional leaks about what people were actually doing.
That's right. That's right. Absolutely right. And particularly with the background of the Egyptians, which we've already touched on, not all of their sympathies were on. Very few of them were on our side. Very few were probably on the German side, but it was a melting pot, rather like Londonderry during the war in a different context. I've noted, since you asked, my eye lights on the fact that the 1st of May we were told that, it had already been planned. The regiment starts 6 weeks' training today. So that we had about a month, April, shaking down, being at, I think it was Cassassine camp, and then moving to Mina for this emergency situation, had it arisen with the Greeks. But the serious purpose of being there was following the Anzio wipeout or whatever. The serious purpose was to regroup, retrain, re-equip, and be ready for action again, as a fresh division, wherever.
Did you have a lot of replacements to?
We did have some. I mean, I mentioned the survey officer Bill Lowe, and there were other subalterns joined us, and quite a lot of men. Because we had a fair sprinkling of casualties in Anzio.
Were there any difficulties with integrating?
No, I don't think so. These things were very smooth. I mean, the army is a damn good organisation. I mean, these things, on the whole, were handled well. People welded in within a day or two, having been trained on the same equipment among the same sort of people. I don't remember misfit situations arising. I suppose they must have done, but I don't remember them. I was lucky enough on the 2nd of May to hand over the mess accounts, be relieved of this wretched chore, and to get on with a lot of letters and I noted that at least the soothsayer's dangerous 3 weeks had gone. I must have come across a palmist or something when we first arrived in Egypt. We were all conned in this sort of way, and the danger period of 3 weeks had passed. And I noted, I mentioned to you already, there was danger facing me the next day with the audit board, hours and hours wrangling of the mess accounts. They eventually passed muster, but not so with the RHQ canteen account. And the second in command, I've mentioned before, in great anger, takes over the canteen account from the hapless subaltern who has been in charge of it and made a mess. And he, the CO2 in civilian life, is a bank clerk. So at least he knows how to handle this.
What had the subaltern been? Do you remember?
I've no idea. He was probably an archaeology student or something. I've no idea.
When you went on your 6 weeks training,
yes.
Was there anything particular about that?
Well, we didn't go on it. It was entering a phase. We were no longer rest and recreation, which had been the order of the day for 3 weeks or so.
Back to work.
This was back to work. I mean, we were now meant to be seriously training. It didn't, in fact, mean anything tremendously organised. It hardly could do, sitting in a row of tents at the side of the Great Pyramid. There are limits. I mean, you could hold drills, physical drills, get people active, make sure they were running around and exerting themselves. But there were limits to what you could, in fact, do, apart from sending people on courses, as I went on this intelligence course.
Did you do any training at high level in unit? Were there any exercises or anything of that sort?
I don't know. I wish I could remember what the units were in Egypt at that time. I mean, we were a gunner regiment. Presumably, there must have been, anyway, for garrison purposes, one or two infantry brigades. I don't remember doing exercises with them.
Because the whole division had gone to Egypt, hadn't it? The whole of the Black Cat division had.
As far as I know, they had. Yes, the 56th Division had gone as a whole. But, of course, they were scattered over quite a sizeable territory. We were not all at the side of the pyramids. I don't know where the others were. May 15th, A.C. Smith, on attachment to headquarters Royal Artillery, dies of enteric fever very suddenly. I have to settle up his file, courses file, and mess accounts. Hasty arrangements, hot weather, the funeral is held. I've got a photo here of the funeral.
By custom, it's usually within 24 hours, isn't it?
Do you mean in the army or in hot weather?
Well, in the Middle East.
In the Middle East, yes.
By Muslim custom, for obvious reasons, is as quick as possible.
That's right, for the most obvious reasons, that's right. Yes, that's right. The funeral is held, and there's then a terrific sandstorm, and many tents blow away. Read with pleasure in the army newspapers, and presumably the civilian newspapers in Cairo, about successes in Italy. At last the breakout was happening over there. And Cassino had fallen, and the Anzio bridgehead had linked up with the troops coming from the south.
So the Americans had pushed up the Liri Valley, hadn't they?
That's right. And we were getting near to the point of Mark Clark, triumphalist entry into Rome.
What impact did that make?
What, entering Rome?
His entry to Rome and his...
I think there was a general sort of sardonic view that this was predetermined, that Mark Clark entering Rome mattered a great deal to Mark Clark, and that it would be seen as an American, the culmination of an American campaign, which it was. And that the Brits would be very much second fiddle. slightest cynical amusement. Mind you, we were 1,000 miles away from there at this time, and we were just reading about it as interested parties, but it made more sense to us than to most people because the place names had been our sort of bread and butter.